Hey, it's time to do a little extended making sausage. We're taking a look at politics today on this election week. During Making Sausage, we find out how politics work, and we're going to look at the impact of the results of Tuesday's election. Joining this conversation, Greg Pepin and Aaron Brown. Greg's a Republican strategist with over 25 years of campaign experience, and Aaron Brown has worked in Iron Range Media since he was 16, former newspaper editor, radio reporter. He teaches at Hibbing Community College, and he's the host of the Great Northern Radio Show and writes the blog Minnesota Brown. Greg and Aaron join us now. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
All right. So I think we will begin this morning. We want to go through some of the races across northern Minnesota and have each of you weigh in on it. So I think we should start with the Congressional District 8, the race between Nolan and Mills. Greg, you start us off.
Well, I think that as expected, it was a close race, very hard fought. Tens of millions in outside dollars coming into the race, and I think it could have. It was essentially a horse apiece on that race, Heidi. I think it could have gone either way, fortunately for Congressman Nolan, it went his way by just a narrow margin. I think there was probably some disappointment in the Mills camp that they weren't able to translate all of the Trump strength in the 8th congressional district to down ballot strength for him. So I think there's probably going to be some introspection on the Mills campaign as to why that may have happened and what they could have done differently.
Aaron, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, Rick Nolan winning that race in the climate that we had is a minor miracle. When you were seeing the Trump vote come in the 8th district so strongly, you were seeing state legislators fall to the Republican wave in the district, you really wondered how Rick Nolan could survive. But what I see in the numbers is Rick Nolan getting ticket splitters. Trump people went into the ballot and they voted for Trump and they voted for Nolan, and then in some cases they crossed back over to vote Republican in the legislative races, which is very surprising. And I think there's a lot of different reasons that might be, but I think looking at the Iron Range, which is my area, I really see Nolan established himself as a leader on mining issues, and a lot of taconite miners that I know appreciated his work on the tariff issue in particular. They didn't translate that support back to other Democrats, but they did appreciate it with Nolan, and I got to imagine that's the 2,000 vote margin that Nolan got right there.
Greg, do you think Republicans will look for another candidate other than Stuart Mills next time?
I think probably Stuart Mills has earned the right of first refusal. That doesn't mean that there won't be some discussions internally as to whether there should be another candidate. But I think establishment Republicans in the 8th, and they are a breed unto themselves. We'll probably give him the right of first refusal, but again, that's not going to prevent them from maybe having some serious discussions as to whether there should be a different candidate. And frankly, we have to see what he wants to do. He may not want to run again,
yeah.
And that may be the answer to that question.
Uh-huh. Well, let's turn to some other legislative races more locally. I think Senate Districts 9 and 10, which would be Aiken County, Crow Wing, Morrison, Southern Cass, Republicans swept there, and that wasn't a big surprise. Senate District 6, way up in northern St. Louis County, over toward Lake and Cook County, DFLers held on to that, and that's not a big surprise. But let's turn to Senate District 5 first, because there was a clean sweep of Republicans there. Incumbents Tom Saxog, state senator, as well as House Representatives John Purcell and Tom Anzils. All three were defeated by their Republican opponents. Bliss and Lehman and Justin Eichhorn won the Senate seat from Saxog. So, Aaron, why don't we start with you? What's your take on Senate District 5?
Well, yeah, that was the dam breaking on the line that had existed between the Brainerd Lakes area, which had been trending more conservative, and the classically DFL Iron Range. And you had District 5, which is the far western Iron Range, but it also bleeds down into Cass County and over to Bemidji and some areas that are very much not the Iron Range. So it was the line, and obviously the Republicans made big gains there. And, of course, I have that personal connection. You know, Tom Anzels is a friend of mine, and I have helped him with his campaigns over the years, and I helped him a lot on this one. And, you know, one of the things, just speaking in that role, we thought we were in better shape than we obviously were. And I think part of that is, you know, the internal polling that the DFL had ultimately wasn't any better than the polling around the country for the presidential race or other things. When you lose by the swing that you saw, turnout wasn't dramatically different than, in fact, it was even a little, I want to say it might have even been a little less than 2012 when Anzels beat McElfatrick, Carolyn McElfatrick, the state representative who you know, kind of cuts a similar profile to Sandy Lehman. That swing was huge, though, nevertheless. Without much turnout, there was a big swing. And then Purcell, I don't think anybody had Purcell on a list of people who might be in danger, and yet he lost to Matt Bliss by a decent margin. And then the big surprise, I think, was Senator Tom Saxog. Nobody in the DFL, anyway, thought Saxog was in danger, and nobody thought the Republicans had recruited the best possible candidate to run against him. And yet, the wave was, this is a wave, you know, and it just took him out. And it was a close race, but it was nevertheless the result. And so, big change there in District 5. And, you know, I think it has to be a wake-up call for the Democrats that you can't count on districts that have just part of the range in them to behave as range districts. They are behaving more like Brainerd area districts than range districts.
That's our political commentary, Aaron Brown. We're also joined by Greg Pepin, who's active in Republican elections and politics. Greg, your take on Senate District 5.
Yeah, I think with Senate District 5, you know, when I was on your show earlier this fall, late summer, I had indicated that that was really the ground zero of what we might see with a Trump candidacy and what impact a Trump candidacy may have on districts as Aaron has described it. What I see in not only in Senate District 5, but other parts of rural Minnesota is I really do see that we, and it hasn't quite hit the range yet. I think that it's still made the deep range of which Aaron is so familiar and writes so eloquently of. But I think that's I think we're in 5 to 10 years we will. And that is the transformation of rural parts of Minnesota, as in the nation, to more conservative Republican politics. And without wanting to sound too partisan here, I really believe that this isn't unexpected, given the dominance of the Metro faction within the DFL in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and the issues matrix that the Metro-centric DFL has really forwarded. And I think that this was a harbinger election where people in rural Minnesota, as in across the nation, said, we're done. We're done with the Democrats. We don't believe what they stand for, and we're going to vote that way. And you saw that with not only with Trump voters across the nation, but right here, right in the heart of northern Minnesota in Senate District 5.
We also saw that in Senate District 2, which incumbent DFL Rod Scoy from Clearbrook was defeated by Paul Utke, from the Republican from Park Rapids. And then there was an open seat there won by the Republican candidate, and Steve Green, the Republican in Senate District 2, representative in that district, he retained his seat. And so some thoughts on Senate District 2, Greg?
Similar, I think, from what we saw. I know that the Democrats were very much wanted to play in the seat that was the northern seat. I think it's 2A that's got the Bagley, and it's got the Red Lake Reservation, goes all the way up to Lake of the Woods County. I think that was on their radar screen. They had a candidate that was flawed, that had some abuse charges, some marital issues and abuse charges that were from his past that came up. He had daughters that pretty much repudiated him. So I think that one, while I believe originally that was a highly coveted pickup, or that the Democrats hoped that they would pick up, that one fell by the wayside. Steve Green has been a mainstay in the area, so that was not a surprise that he kept his seat. Paul Utke, however, defeating Rod Skoy, the chair of the tax committee, was a upset. Not unexpected. I think that both parties, knew that would be a hard-fought race. And again, you had maybe some health insurance concerns that came up there with Minshew. I think the governor's comments didn't help Democrat candidates about the Affordable Care Act no longer being affordable, and I think that played out in some of these districts, particularly in that one as well.
Aaron, so DFLers lost two senior representatives with lots of seniority, including they're kind of powerful senators too, in Saxhog and Skoy. So some of your thoughts on that?
Well, obviously, yeah. I mean, you look at the districts and you see the vote totals, and maybe you can say now that maybe it's not totally shocking because of the trends in those districts. But yeah, big changes in the delegation of Northern Minnesota representatives. Changes in the state Senate. Obviously, Republicans take the state Senate, and Senator Tom Bach from Cook is no longer going to be obviously not the majority leader, and he's not running for minority leader either. So there will be a new caucus leadership in the Senate, which means coming into the new session, nobody from the range will have any significant or any even no Northern Minnesota Democrat will have any significant leadership positions, which hasn't happened in a long time. So that's going to be a big change. And going back to something Greg was talking about with the changes going on in Northern Minnesota, and we're seeing them now as political changes and trends, and that's legit. You can look at the numbers and make that argument. But what's really, I think, happening is that there's a larger economic and demographic reality that's kind of feeding these political changes. I think we can objectively say that voters rejected the DFL in these districts, but they rejected it out of frustration that things aren't getting better for them, and that there's things that politics can do, and there's things that are part of, like particularly on the range, where, by the way, I mean, yeah, the range held DFL, but there was a big swing. A 10 to 15 or even 20-point swing in some of those really overwhelmingly Democratic House or legislative seats. And then Trump carried range towns. I mean, Trump carried Hibbing by 7 votes, which hasn't happened. Hibbing hasn't gone Republican since Hoover, and I'm not even kidding. That is, I checked. So that is amazing. So why did they do it? Well, life in Hibbing or range towns is stuck in this economic malaise, I guess, to borrow a Jimmy Carter term, and so people are going to explore other options in that environment, and then culturally, the children, the liberal children of the Iron Range, look for something else, and they tend to go to the Twin Cities and join with the liberal majorities there, and the people who stay behind are staying for family reasons, for reasons that might be considered more small C conservative, and they tending to vote conservatively at the polls. So, that's where we're starting to see these changes, these demographic splits. And I would argue that I won't say it doesn't matter who's in office, because it does, but the things that are happening are not happening because Republicans or Democrats are in office. They're happening because of the economic changes in big industry in rural Minnesota and farming and manufacturing. And these things are happening all over the country. And that's why I think nationwide we saw a huge rural repudiation of the Democratic Party. And the turnout wasn't dramatically better across the nation. It was maybe even smaller in some places. It was in Wisconsin, places like that. And we're just seeing that the rural precincts that used to give Democrats, some people in those precincts would vote Democratic and maybe more would vote Republican. Well, they just got tired of it, and they're tired of the same. And now it's on the Republicans to prove they can do something for those places. And as a Democrat, I'm here saying, well, I guess they get that chance, don't they? And so we'll see what comes out of it.
Will the DFL have a new strategy for rural Minnesota? Or
they should. Tom Enzels and I would talk about this. We were doing our darndest for rural Minnesota. We really were. And we made some progress, we thought. But obviously the voters didn't see it that way. So one of the things Greg mentioned, Minshew, obviously that was a big issue. I would agree it might have been the issue, certainly in the District 5 races. People's insurance premiums are going up. You can't argue with it. People were talking about it, and so it was a problem. And, you know, I would argue, and Tom was arguing, that it was not just because of the insurance exchange, but because of rising premiums. And, you know, insurance was becoming a problem before the Affordable Care Act. And so we had these same problems with risk in the pool, and people were expensive to cover, and it was just a different version of the same problems. And the argument is, well, let's reform it. Well, obviously now we're going to have a big, strong move to simply do away with the system and try to go back to, I don't know, whatever we had before. I don't know. We'll see what the Republicans come up with. It's on them now. But, you know, it's hard to argue that I made this system, but trust me to fix it. Even if it's true, it's hard to argue that to voters. They don't believe it. And I guess you don't blame them. So that's what happened here.
Greg, to you, what do the Republicans have on the agenda? How much did health care, health insurance premiums play into everything?
Sure. And I think the Speaker, Kurt Dowd, talked about this yesterday to some length, that obviously will be one of the top items that Republicans will deal with. And you know, and I think Aaron makes a good point, but I would add to it that really, you know, Minnesota had a really good health care system. It was really good. We had, you know, we may have had 8 or 9% that were uninsured, and certainly that's a number that could be improved, but among the nation leading. And really what happened is, I think the Democrats, in their zest for universal health care, and this has been something, this isn't a new issue for them. This is, Ted Kennedy had been pushing universal health care and Harry Truman back to the 40s. But they threw out a good system. In their zest to get a universal health care system, they threw out what Minnesota had, which was good, rather than tweaking it and making some changes. And I think that was short-sighted. And I think that we can go back to, as Aaron said, the existing system or the old system, which was good. We can make tweaks, and it will be up to Republicans to make those changes. And yes, they probably will have to accept some things, some reforms to the system that they might not have accepted before. But but what we did was we threw the baby out with the bathwater, and I think that was just too reactionary. And you know what you're seeing here. Really, what you're seeing in Minnesota, northern Minnesota, in Senate District 5, across the nation, it really is, people are fed up with, you know, and you heard these words on election night, with the establishment, with the elites, with the intellectuals, that they've had a chance to run the government, and they've screwed it up. And so, you know what? What's better than a little bit of rural Minnesota common sense to some of these issues? And I think that's hopefully what you will see. And if that becomes a bipartisan, rural common sense, all the better.
Before we go, Aaron, you just put a blog post up on the impact on the IRRB. Can you tell us more about what you think of that?
Yeah, obviously the IRRB hasn't been appointed yet for the new year, but given the changes we just talked about in District 5, I've projected, I guess you could say, that we'll have a 5-4 DFL majority on the 9-member IRRB, the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. For a quick refresher, it's a state agency that's run by an appointed legislative board of legislative members that oversees taconite production taxes. Mines don't pay property tax, they pay production tax instead, and it goes to local communities. IRRB is a economic development and public works engine for that. Now, Democrats have long dominated this board because of the dominance of the DFL on the range, but as the range has shrunk in population and redistricting over the last several decades has increased the size of their districts, they've had to increasingly go to representatives and senators on the edges of the Iron Range to be members of the board. And now we see that with the edges of that region going Republican, that we'll have, I believe, 4 members who are Republican and 5 who are Democrats. Obviously, the 3 District 5, well, Purcell wasn't on there, but Saxog and Anzels were on the board, and they'll be replaced by Republicans. And then you have the Senate appointee, Rod Scoy, lost, and the new Republican majority will appoint a Republican. I expect they'll appoint Carrie Rood from Breezy Point, unless she doesn't want it. And that, with Dale Lewick already being on the board from Aiken and Crosby, That means you will see a very narrow DFL majority, which means that if the DFL wants to do DFL things, if the DFL members want to do things differently than the Republicans, they'll have to really have their act together in order to do so. And Republicans, for the first time in modern memory, will have the ability to strategize a little bit about what they want to do on the IRRB board, because there's four of them, enough to, you know, maybe recruit a DFL member to cross over on something if they had a good idea. So it'll be up to our elected leaders of either party to figure out what to do to turn around the economy of the Iron Range. And that's not just in mining issues, but in economic diversification issues, which, you know, one of the things I noticed was the similarity in the rhetoric on economic diversification you heard out of both DFL and Republican members. I think everybody recognizes that importance, and maybe they have different ways of doing it, but they seem to share that goal. And so they'll have to work together, and that'll be a new thing for the IRRB, and we'll see how the transition goes.
Greg, the Minnesota Republicans have never liked the IRRB much because they've seen it as a pot of money for DFLers to seed into their district to keep them in office. What do you think, the attitude's going to shift a little bit?
I think it probably will, and I think that really what Republicans would like to see, whether they will push that or not this session, it remains to be seen, but is more citizen input there. And to get it away from a select handpicked group of lawmakers that have kind of dominated that process and have really, you know, arguably could say have used that as their own kind of personal pot of money to dole out for various projects. Rather than really looking at it from a range-wide perspective, it's been more parochial. And, you know, this is one area where Aaron and I have had some spirited discussions and actually probably agree more than we disagree about reform to the IRRB and how that board can be a catalyst for that economic diversification, as opposed to more of a being done for more parochial interests. So I hope that this now, this new, what could be a 5-4 majority, really does stimulate some of those discussions, because it is much needed. And I think Republicans do understand that the range is a unique area with unique needs, and that the IRRB is a unique government entity that can address those. But it's frankly, it's been a failure in many levels. And hopefully this can we can have that discussion to change it to do some good for the region.
That's Republican strategist Greg Pepin. We've also been talking with Minnesota Brown blogger Aaron Brown. We hope to do this again sometime with you guys. We appreciate talking to you today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Nice talking with you, too.
Send us your thoughts, comments at kaxe.org. Up next, we've got National Native News. We'd